You're listening to Neurodiversity at Work.
Life can be so shady. The way some people try to bring you down. Why's it got to be so crazy? Always trying to give you the run around.
Today's episode is sponsored by Updemize. Updemize is a unique training platform that helps companies hire and retain neurodiverse talent. They are already working with an amazing client list globally. I actually first came across Updemize when I met CEO and founder Ed Thompson at an event. Ed's talk inspired me to actually do this podcast and all the other interesting and fascinating things I'm getting involved in around neurodiversity. If you want to find out more about Optimize and their work, head to optimize.com. That's Optimize with a Z. I also interviewed Ed in episode 2, so why don't you go and check it out there? In today's episode, I interview Lucy Hobbs. Lucy is doing some fantastic work in the creative industry around neurodiversity. She's holding lots of events, creating content, and engaging with the neurodiversity community to see what we can do to raise extra awareness. It's fantastic work Lucy is doing. You need to check it out, and you can hear her story today on the podcast. Enjoy. Hi, Lucy. Welcome to the podcast. Really pleased to have you with us today. Would you just like to tell the audience who you are, what you do, a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so as you say, I'm Lucy Hobbs. I started up a neurodiverse network for the industry that I work in 2017. I work as a creative director in creative and tech industry. So I started up this platform 3 years ago to kind of address the lack of sort of awareness and understanding of neurodiversity in my industry. And so what I do is I do events, I do kind of workshops and keynotes and advocacy work and consultancy work within organisations.
Fantastic. And I've seen some of the events and the work that you've been doing, and it's really fascinating. And you've got a wide variety of people involved in those events and have been doing some great work. Do you just want to tell people a little bit more around the types of things that you've put on and the types of people that you invite along to those events?
Sure. I started off very much just kind of people that I met in my... So I spoke at an industry conference about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago. And before that, I didn't talk about having ADHD, you see. So I found out about this conference. It popped up on social media, and before that, I'd never spoken up as a freelancer. I didn't really want anyone to know because there's a perceived stigma about ADHD especially. So I didn't speak up about it. And then I got invited to speak at this conference because I saw this neurodiversity breakfast pop up in my social feed. And I went along, and these people were organising a conference. And like at the end of the meeting, I've sort of put my hand up and said, they said, has anyone, you know, in the audience got anyone neurodiverse? And I put my hand up and I said I had ADHD and I'd never spoken up about it. And the organizer was almost in tears. She was like, oh my God, you know, come and speak at our conference. And I mean, this isn't just me. There's lots of people like this. So anyway, I went to speak at this conference and I kind of told everyone then that I had ADHD. I talked about my experience as a creative, with this sort of with the challenges and the strengths of ADHD. And then I realized that I've just told everyone. So I kind of had to do something about it. And I realized that there was no kind of group or platform to carry on the conversation. So I thought, well, I'll start one up because there wasn't anything. And I really wanted to sort of meet my, you know, people like myself. And I could see that there was a need that the people at this conference that I met wanted to sort of continue the conversation on as well. So what I did was at the end of that conference, I kind of an email went out to all the people that that went, and they sort of put on that I wanted to start a group, and this was my email. So quite a few people got in touch with me, like organizations offering me space and people offering to come and talk. So I kind of just like basically put it together and just had people come and talk about those. At first it was just people talking really just about their experience of maybe finding out later in life that they're a neurodivergent, or they may be diagnosed when they're a child, and they just talked about their kind of challenges and their strengths and what they did for work. It's kind of very different levels of people. Like some people could be quite senior or just left college, that kind of thing. And then I've done about 8 events now, and they've kind of sort of started to develop into sort of more themes. And then off the back of that, I've been asked to, you know, talk at panels or talk at different organizations, or to come and present and teach about neurodiversity. So I've sort of developed a couple of workshops now. And then we also have like the blog. So I invite people to come and do a blog if they're not the kind of people that really want to stand up and talk in front of people. And I've also done some consultancy work recently for Universal Music, actually, for their Creative Differences Handbook, which is an amazing free resource. And I introduced them to a lot of people for their research, because they very much took that from the lived experience. They interviewed a few neurodivergent people to get their kind of ideas from, and, you know, how to put the book together, etc. So I was very proud to be part of that. And that's great, because that's really started the conversation. I mean, I'll continue that conversation in the creative industries, and to just really help with awareness. Yeah, and I've sort of worked from some other brands and stuff like that as well. So, and I'm, yeah, keeping going, basically keep ticking along. But, you know, it's not, I don't earn a lot of money from it. My primary passion is being a creative director, and that's where I sort of work as well. But I, you know, I like to keep my hands in lots of different pies. So this is really interesting work as well. And I've met so many brilliant people from it as well, that, you know, beyond creative and tech, and it's been absolutely fantastic to really kind of to share stories and understand ourselves and kind of develop and kind of know what we can ask for now, you know, when we're at work, etc. So yeah, it's like, yeah, I could talk about neurodiversity for hours, basically. It's become a bit of an obsession, but it's fantastic to be able to do something that's really making a change and improving people's lives. And you know, I mean, it's slow, and we're getting, you know, but there's some, you know, it's a start, basically.
Brilliant.
With any sort of diversity thing, it's a start, you know, because you've got subconscious, unconscious bias, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's a minefield. But yeah, anyway, I'm rambling on, so ask me another question.
Yes. That's a common trait of us, I guess, Lucy, is the ability to share loads of ideas and loads of thoughts and to be highly creative. I think linking that back to what you've just said there, the creative industry, you know, you imagine actually that the creative industry and the music industry, as you've mentioned, the work that's being done there and the work that you're helping with, which is absolutely amazing. You'd imagine that there's a lot of neurodiverse people who are already within that industry, right?
Absolutely. But I think there was a stat from Creative Equals that said that 30%, there's 30% neurodivergent people within creative and tech already, and in leadership roles. So they're already there. They always have been there, but they haven't had the support and the kind of awareness that could have kept. But they are there, but they're not. I don't know, because I had an event recently and we worked out that most neurodivergent people actually end up freelancing and working for themselves, because they just can't work in an office. They can't work in that environment, because it just doesn't work for them. There's kind of burnout, there's sensory problems, you know, communication problems, et cetera, et cetera. So, but these people, they have amazing skills, you know, and they have challenges as well. But, you know, I think companies are starting to wake up to this now and realizing that they need people that think differently within their organizations. They need to understand how to support them, because otherwise they're going to lose out you know, with the sort of advent of AI and automation. You know, these skills that neurodivergent people are going to be even more important in the future. And you know, companies like SAP, Microsoft. I mean, GCHQ have been positively discriminating for neurodivergent people for about 20 years now because they crack codes, they do amazing things, and they can think, you know, differently and join the dots. So, you know, other companies are starting to wake up, and it's not just about, you know, inclusion and equality. It's about making business sense. So there's an article in the Telegraph a few months ago, and it was really about how it makes business sense to employ these people, which it does. So, yeah, people are beginning to wake up to that now.
Sometimes that's what they need, right? Organizations, businesses specifically, you know, need that kind of push. They're not always going to go, oh, yeah, it's the right thing to do, therefore we're going to invest lots of time and energy in it. It's the balance between it's the right thing to do and there is also some momentum behind it and potentially some good business logic, business sense behind it. And I think we're starting to get that now with the likes, as you mentioned, of, you know, Microsoft, IBM are now doing a global program.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like Steve Silberman's article he wrote quite a while back about the geek syndrome, about Silicon Valley being, you know, like the built by autistic people. It's like, it's no kind of surprise, but people kind of forget that when they're kind of designing their HR policies, you know, or their kind of interview processes do not kind of, are not very kind of inclusive. Do you see what I mean? So it's kind of, yeah, they don't see the bigger picture. So people are starting to see that now, I think. So, and especially in that, and, you know, there has been this kind of cliche that autistic people are really good at tech and maths. Not all autistic people can do any jobs. That's like, you know, it's, you know, and my thing as well is creative people, because I'll tell you what, I've met so many creative people that I know have ADHD, but they probably don't know themselves, because I've got that kind of radar for people. And and ADHD does have quite a bit of stigma attached. And I've met people that would not disclose their ADHD that are creatives as well. So it's not just about autism and like tech, basically. It's also about creativity and ADHD. Obviously, dyslexia, you know, dyspraxic people. Well, you know, there's so many overlaps as well with the kind of the strengths and the challenges. So, yeah, it's so much more bigger, basically, than autism and tech.
Absolutely. And from, you know, things that I've read and what I've heard, actually, for women, it's much more difficult as well within these environments who have ADHD or autism, who are on the spectrum. You're right, there's much more stigma and challenge around people actually standing up and saying, you know, I'm ADHD or I'm autistic. And I think that is a big kind of culture shift that needs to happen within organizations in how they respond to individuals, but specifically how they respond to women in that environment when they turn around and they want to let people know that they're ADHD or autistic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, thanks for bringing that up, actually, Theo. I mean, all the research, you know, a lot of the research, you know, historically has been done on men. So it's like specialists, whatever, doctors, you know, they just presume that women don't have autism or are autistic, sorry, or have ADHD, you know, because it's thought that it's more of a male thing. But is that because the research is all, you know, been done on men? Probably. So, and then there was some just terrible theories about the male brain and all these kind of things. But for me, gender's quite fluid, you know, so it's not, you know, you're this in box or that box. The same with sort of, you know, with neurodiversity. But, you know, it can be more difficult for women, because if you're seen to be too passionate, you know, you'll get accused of being aggressive when you're actually just being passionate, or, you know, if you're talking too much. And, you know, and women are sort of, they have to be like, you know, nurture people and this and that, you know, that's the whole kind of subconscious bias about female and male. And then, you know, they're males as well. I mean, it's difficult for them as well, because, you know, to show vulnerability is really hard for men and women, it can be. Do you see what I mean? So there's all these kind of like perceived ideas of how we should be, which don't help at all. So it's not just about, it's so much bigger than neurodiversity as well, all of that. And diversity, BAME, LGBT, the whole thing, you know, it's kind of, we suffer from a lot of kind of subconscious and unconscious biases. So, and I think it's really important to be aware of that as a society.
And what absolutely
can bring, you know, that aren't the typical, like, generic kind of, like, this is the perfect human being or whatever that is, you know, the normal human being.
What do you think is in the future for neurodiversity then? Because you're connected with a lot of people, you're involved in these events, you're really passionate and involved in the subject, which is amazing. And you must kind of start to see some level of momentum building, some level of engagement that perhaps wasn't there even a year, 2 years ago. How do you see this going? Where do you see it going from here?
That's a quite difficult question, because I think, you know, neurodiversity, when you say it, use the word in that kind of context, I think, you know, we live in a neurodiverse society. Neurodiversity is a fact. It's not going to be more neurodiverse or less, because it's always about 15-20% of the population, I think, that are neurodivergent, but they're just more neurodivergent than other people, if you see what I mean, because we're all neurodiverse, we've all got different brains. But I would like to see that people employ people for their strengths, you know, and employ specialists rather than generalists. So, you know, maybe the ideal sort of team could be kind of put together because of their sort of how their strengths complement each other. So you could have in one team, you know, you'd have someone who's a big thinker, you'd have someone who had really good attention to detail, you'd have someone that maybe is a, you know, depending on what the project is, to kind of match people's profiles to those projects or to those teams. Do you see what I mean? So you wouldn't have too many people with the same strengths necessarily, but then again, they might complement each other as well. But it's, yeah, I think there must be some way of doing that, of profiling people. And I would love to do some research into that, actually. So there must be some sort of way of doing that, so people are, you know, don't have to tick all the boxes to get a job. They don't have to be a generalist. They don't have to sort of tick all these long line of kind of things to get that job. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think so, focusing on strengths is such an important element of getting the best out of somebody who's neurodiverse. It's getting the best out of anyone, right? And we talk about this quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be an organisational shift. There needs to be support for hiring managers, because I don't think there is enough support. So I don't think
support for hiring managers.
For hiring managers, for the managers, basically, because they may want to focus on people's strengths, but they don't know how to. And I think a lot of organisations.
I think you should hire neurodivergent leaders, because neurodivergent people make really good leaders, actually, but they don't get to those jobs necessarily, because there's a kind of process to get there, which might not suit the way that, you know, they kind of have more zigzaggy careers, I think. And, you know, if you hire neurodivergent leaders, you're going to naturally have people who are neurodivergent wanting to work at that company as well, I think, you know, and you just support them. I mean, I was watching Mad Men the other day, and I was, you know, the creative directors in there, they'd have like a PA, a secretary. If I could have a job with like a secretary that just did everything for me, even like my house and everything like they had in those days, I would be flying. But, you know, it's the whole thing is you have to, as a creative director these days, you have to do the whole sort of admin, all the organisation, everything. I mean, I'm actually quite pretty organised. I organise events and stuff, and I can do that, but it's can be quite painful as well. But I'm much better probably just kind of developing the ideas and also delegating and that kind of stuff, like you would as a leader. But these days they want you to be able to do everything, you know, rather than employing two people to kind of work complementary, they're very much employing single people, I think. Do you see what I mean? And rather than seeing it as a bigger team, it's like, oh, we've got this budget, we could kind of got to employ this person, they've got to have all these skills, you know, because they're just thinking of their budgets and what they have to fill. But if you see the bigger picture and how those people work together, you're probably going to have a much better team and much better strengths, you know.
Definitely. And I couldn't agree more. I think being able to look more widely across the organisation and to solve the problems that you're facing, rather than to continue down that box filling, which unfortunately is the easy option. It's the easy way to go. We need another person. We're going to get the same type of person as we had before. We're going to fill this box because these are the tasks that were previously done, and these are the tasks that we're going to have in the future, rather than what does the future look like? What problems, what challenges are we facing, and how are we going to resolve them? And how are we going to diversify our teams? There are some organisations that do it, some more agile organisations, that almost have to do it by nature of the direction they're going in. But it would be great to see so many more organisations taking that step. And I think you're right. That's where the future becomes exciting, where organisations make that shift. And I think there's a lot of data now to show. You can go on Google Trends. People are typing in neurodiversity. What is neurodiversity? Neurodiversity at work. Into Google at a rate in the UK that they've not done in the last 2 years. They're doing it at a rate like never before. Basically, the trend is showing that people, just go on Google Trends, type in neurodiversity as a search term, look at it globally, and you'll see it is going through the roof in the last 2 years. So for me, that is amazing, because that is people want to learn about what it is, what it means within the workplace. And the next step beyond there, like diversity, inclusion, now belonging, is that once you go through the phase of people learning about what it is, what it means, then they start to think about what they can do. And it's incredible people like you who are actually helping lift the lid within the digital sphere. You're putting on a lot of events, you're talking, and you're just opening up that conversation. And I think that is the most powerful thing that we can be doing at the moment. And clearly, from the work you're doing, you're doing a great job. So on that basis, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on. And I'm just, finally, for our audience, what where can they find you? Where can they hear more about you? Where can they attend one of the events, and how do they get involved?
Right, so that's quite a few questions to answer. I've probably forgotten most of them now. I have a website, so it's www.thefuturesnd.com. So, and that's where my kind of events go. And obviously, I'm on Twitter at The Future is ND and Instagram. Yeah, so I think I've got another event coming up in June, and then I'm trying to do another one maybe November, September time. So I'm looking at doing like 3 or 4 a year, but I'm also doing my freelance creative work, which takes up a lot of my time. So I'm kind of doing those. It's really rewarding and enjoyable as well, but it's really hard work, because I probably need to find a way to, but I don't want it to be like something that I'm making money out of. I mean, I have to make enough to make it worth my while, but it's not like I'm not really a profit organization, because I think as soon as it turns into that, it becomes something completely different, and it's something, then it's a job. Do you see what I mean? So I want to, that's why I would, I'm at the moment looking for sort of creative direction work, and I'd like to maybe get a full-time role doing that while I can do this as sort of my passion project on the side, because I want to do it as a passion project and not as a full-time job when it becomes something different. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think it's the same with what you do. It's like kind of your passion. You're doing that because you really care, and it's, you want to raise awareness yourself. It's the same, isn't it?
Definitely. And I urge anybody who's interested in supporting you from the ND side, and they want to get involved in your event, sponsor, talk.
I've got some amazing supporters, like Mediacom always give me their space, huge. The creative director there, like Wayne Deacon, he's awesome. And I've got I had like Alice Capo, who designed my website. She came up to me at the first events and let me make your website, and I've got Abby Sylvester that helps me with all my kind of blogs and stuff, and even like the copy on the Eventbrite. And I've got Nell, who's done loads of editing for me, and she's been massively supportive right from the beginning, and she's going to come and help film. So, I mean, there's probably loads of other people as well I haven't mentioned, but I've had some brilliantly supportive people that have just, I wouldn't have been able to do it without them, basically, because and it's, these people, they've got jobs, you've got like other stuff you've got to do. So it's really, really, I'm really grateful that they give up their time to do this. Yeah, it means a lot.
Thank you so much for that. And I think it's a good sign of where neurodiversity is going and the level of support and commitment,
because people
are creating significant change.
They want to get involved. They want to come and talk. They want to, it's so important. It's like, that there's a platform now to do this, and the more people that do it, the more people want to do it. But there's still a lot of people out there that won't speak up, and they won't say. So hopefully that will change more in the future, and it won't be such a stigma, and will be so much more accepted.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for being in the podcast, and I'll be I'll keep watching your events and hopefully get along to one of them soon.
Yeah, that'd be great to meet you in person, Theo, at some point.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Absolute pleasure.
This episode was brought to you by Uptimize, the neurodiversity training platform for employers. If you think your business could benefit by doing more to attract and retain people who think differently, visit Uptimize's website at uptimize.com.